Now, more Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
In all the midst of this NFL free agency talk, we still have the NBA going on. In fact, we're down below 20 games for teams as far as the regular season is concerned. Last week, we talked about jockeying for position in both the East and Western Conference. And as we sit right now, I think we can comfortably say we know which 10 teams are going to be representing each conference in the play-in round. And then, of course, the NBA playoffs. What position they're going to be in, that is still up for grabs. We can talk about that and a couple of other storylines, including the return of Jason Tatum. And I know one man in particular that is extremely excited about that is our next guest. He is James Holas, our NBA analyst. James, always a pleasure to get you on. I appreciate you taking out the time again today.
So excited with me in like an elevated state, right? I'm in a zen flow right now as a Celtics fan. Everything's coming up aces. Everything's coming up roses. I have no disappointments. I have no true long-term expectations past this season. So I've reached almost I'm almost like a human form of chai tea right now. I'm just relaxed.
As you should be, because the Celtics have won the last two. They've won 8 out of 10. That's beyond Jason Tatum, right? We can talk about that in a moment. But in the midst of Boston winning 8 out of 10, the Detroit Pistons have played 500 basketball over that period of time, which means over the final 17, 18 games, the Celtics have a real shot at cracking the number one seed in the Eastern Conference, and that seemed like a pipe dream a week ago.
That's awesome, and I didn't even think about it until you brought it up, because, yeah, we know the Pistons have been scuffling, but you got to take a big picture, bird's eye view here. The Pistons have been the class of the East. Every team goes through some swoons, ups and downs. This is their time. This is like the dog days of the season. They're going to really kind of lock in the last 10 games. This is what the goal is, right? Really kind of hone themselves together, make sure everybody's up to speed. While the Celtics are also integrating a big piece, Jason Tatum's return. He looks reasonably good for somebody that had such a long layoff from a serious injury. But we also know they're about sharpening rotations, too. So the dirty secret is Boston has never been an upper echelon team. Their floor is very high, and they could churn out regular season wins. But the other elite teams in the league, they're 4-10 or something, 4-9. They haven't been great against the Denvers and the Detroits of the league, and like the Knicks manhandled them the other day. So even a team like Charlotte came through and just beat the brakes off them. So the floor is very high, but the ceiling and the margins are very narrow. But the fact that there's even a shot that Boston gets the one seed after all the turmoil of last summer and this season, it's just a phenomenal nod to the coach and the front office being in lockstep, and just the franchise culture.
Let's talk about the return of Jason Tatum. It's insane to think that we could get someone returning from an Achilles injury this fast where they would be this productive. I mean, right out of the gate, he has a double-double for the Celtics this past Friday. It's not just in the NBA. We're seeing it in the NFL. There's been a couple of times where I've seen a guy like Cam Akers tear his Achilles in camp, and somehow he's able to get back. It's kind of amazing to me. I remember, we would have to go back 25, 26 years ago. It was a long time ago. I can't even remember the exact date. I remember watching Vashawn Leonard. Do you remember Vashawn Leonard?
I do. I remember Vashawn.
I remember watching Vashawn Leonard rupture his Achilles on national TV. And at that particular time, it was almost a death sentence for a career. And you fast forward 2.5 decades later, it's kind of the same thing in baseball with Tommy John surgery, right? A pitcher had Tommy John. They were essentially done. We get MLB, in the nose on the show all the time. They tell me that today scouts prefer a young kid to already have Tommy John because you can reconstruct the elbow better than the way it was beforehand. It's amazing to me the advances in medicine where we can have a productive Jason Tatum back this season before the end of the regular season, and you get 20 or so games for him to get back in game shape where he's averaging already 27 minutes a game in two outings.
Yeah, it is remarkable. And technology doesn't just affect things like your cars, right, where we had the old school roll-up windows, and now we have fully electric cars that you can control everything from a touchscreen. Video games, we had the old Nintendo, the little box and the big cartridge, and now your basically your cell phone have more powerful than is more powerful than like the most powerful computer from 20 years ago. Same thing with surgery, right? The technological advances and the medical advances have made it so. Jason Tatum had a lot of advantages. His youth, the fact that I think they got surgery within 24 hours. So from what I understand, one of the top doctors in the field happened to be in the area and they were able to get him on the table like in less than a day. So that was really good for him. And his youth and that, and then technology. So we've made such advances in medicine that I think the results are more Kevin Durant. You know, KD came back from this terrible injury, and he's been amazing, than Vashawn Leonard, because Miami Heat legend Vashawn Leonard, you're right, back then, you ruptured an Achilles, and you're going to be a shadow of your former self when you do come back, other than Dominique Wilkins, who came back like he was just a freak of nature.
Right.
So, yeah, so it's amazing to think that, you know, I was very hesitant about him coming back. I didn't think he looked this good. I didn't think he looked this mobile. You can tell he still didn't trust it. But physically, he looks a lot like Jason Tatum. And so the rest of the league should take notice.
You know, we talk all about the deals that were done at the deadline, who was positioning themselves over the final stretch. And I remember you and I had this conversation thinking that we would see Jason Tatum again this season. Now you take a look at adding this piece at this stage, mid-March. What does it do for the rest of Boston's depth? What do you expect an 8, 9, 10-man rotation to look like as we get down to the final 18 or so games?
One thing you love about the Celtics is that that same kind of culture where a guy like Luka Garza, who was actually out of the rotation because of Vucevic being added, Vucevic's now injured, Garza's back in. So you're going to see some guys get pushed aside, right? I'm pretty sure Jordan Walsh is already out of the rotation because of the arrival of young Shireman. He's been playing really well. So you're going to see the rotation tighten up. We're going to get down to about 8 players, you know, with the occasional ninth guy popping up for foul trouble, injuries, or whatever. So it's going to be Tatum and Brown and Pritchard and Derek White. And then Kate is going to be the mainstay. And then guys like Shireman's going to play. Sam Hauser is going to play. So Joe's going to really, you know, it's a dual tightrope he's walking now. Obviously getting your playoff rotations ready while getting Tatum back up to speed and getting rotations and getting him reps with the key guys. So I, again, have no real expectations for this team because all this is found money. But you can see there's a renewed energy around the team. They really want to get this done.
You are the least biased Boston Celtics fan I have ever met. So I don't even have to tell you to take your Celtics hat off when I ask you this next question. With the return of Tatum, what you have seen from Tatum in 2 games, is this now the new favorite to win the Eastern Conference?
So the only reason I say yes, it's almost like I hate to say a backhanded compliment, but the Knicks have shown some obvious flaws, right? They're still struggling a bit offensively. Karl-Anthony Towns has been up and down. Brunson is still the undersized point guard who people can attack. So that's the Knicks. The Cavs, they added James Harden. We just saw them play the Celtics, and they have issues. They have issues with shooting and scoring outside of Mitchell and James Harden. Because other than that, no one else can really hound the ball. So that's another reason. And obviously the Cavs have their own things mentally that they have to overcome. And other than that, that's like Detroit, young, hasn't really done it yet. We're seeing some of their flaws. We don't know if they have enough shooting and ball handling outside of Cade Cunningham. Durin is a great player, but he's still so young and hasn't really proven himself in the playoff atmosphere. I want to say I'm going to give Detroit their respect for leading all season. I think they still have a slight edge in the favoritism, but for the Celtics, their experience, their depth, their discipline, and their defense have been phenomenal. If somebody came out and said Boston's the favorite to come out of the East, I would say I don't see why not. I wouldn't say they definitely are. I would say I don't see why not.
I agree. I think I could echo just about everything you said in that. But plus, I think when we get down to this stage in the season, it's all about have you been there and have you done it before. I've never been a big fan of sitting here and talking about teams and saying, well, they got to go through the process, right? Because I think in this day and age, especially with player movement, I think we can overstate the process. But when you are as healthy as you've been, relatively speaking, and you have the second best record in the Eastern Conference, and you add another guy like a Jason Tatum to the equation, I think you can just safely just, you don't have to be a guru to say, yes, this is probably the most formidable roster in the Eastern Conference front to back. I don't think there's any question, actually, James, when you look at it on paper. I think it is.
I agree. And if Tatum can get back to about 80-90% of what he was, I think right now he's maybe 75%, right? If he can get back to a reasonable facsimile of who he used to be. With the 1-2 punch like Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, like a lot of teams just don't have the defensive wherewithal to stand up to that. And then you got Pritchard, who's been empowered. Derek White is an all-around glue guy. He's like the guard version of Al Horford, except a more potent shooter. So, yeah, Coach Joe Mazzulla, I think he should be front running for Coach of the Year. He has really done a good job of putting his imprint on this team. They're just tenacious. They play on a string. I'm trying not to get too high about it, but I'm really excited to see how this team goes into the postseason.
Again, James Hollis joining us right now as we talk NBA basketball. James, let's move over to the Western Conference. Man, it was a week ago that I was sitting here in this chair bragging about the New York Knicks and talking about, hey, you know, they took it to the San Antonio Spurs. This is a bad matchup, right? San Antonio, since that point, they've played lights out. They're on a four-game winning streak right now. They look like they've gotten back into form. Everybody goes through peaks and valleys, of course, right? But that same New York Knicks team suffered a loss, and it was a fairly one-sided loss to the Los Angeles Lakers without LeBron James. And I hate to say this about a legend. I hate to say this about an all-star, but the sample size is now large enough that we can look at a Los Angeles Laker team without LeBron James and say, when it's Luka and when it's Austin Reeves running the show and they don't have to worry about LeBron James, it's a better team. It's safe to say that now.
So there's a thing called the uncanny valley when it comes to anything that you create. And the closer you get to reality, the more the glaring flaws kind of stand out and become almost eerie or creepy. So what we're seeing is almost like the reverse effect of that, where LeBron James is still LeBron James, but he has lost just enough where he's close to his normal self, but you can see the glaring flaws, the lack of effort sometimes, the lack of burst, the spotty shooting. Where, everyone respects LeBron so much, and he takes up so much oxygen just from being who he is, that you can tell that it's wearing on the team a little bit. And when he's away, everything fits much cleaner, right? You're not fitting three high usage guys, and they have two. And Austin's a better shooter. Luka's the better player right now. So it's obvious. I don't think it's over. I think there's a way it could possibly work, but just the way that the team is constructed, the Lakers are more than just a clunky fit. It might be a fatal flaw in the team build.
I think it's over. I do. And I don't know where he would go from here because, James, everything you just said kind of fits the narrative of a superstar that has to change their game. They have to change who they have been over the past 18, 19 years. I don't know if that's possible. And I think if you take a look and take the equation out of like a Steph, that's not a fair comparison, right? I want you to look at like the top five greatest players in the history of this game, asking them to not be what they have been for 18, 19 years. It's borderline impossible. It's borderline impossible for them to adjust in that sense.
Other than, I guess, a player of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's ilk, right? He became a much lesser role guy late in his career where he was just shooting skyhooks and playing a little defense. And
yeah,
that was great. But you're absolutely correct, though. LeBron has been a ball-handling, high-usage, high-scoring kind of player, and now he can't keep that same load. What is he going to do? You're going to ask him to just be a power forward who rebounds and defends? No. You're going to ask him just to be a playmaker who plays an offensive hub and doesn't really attack? No. You can't ask him to do that. He's been LeBron James. So it's strange because even though he's aging very gracefully statistically on the court, you just can't have him be the tide that lifts all boats anymore. And if he can't do that, what exactly are you doing with LeBron on a high-quality team that's trying to win? So I think that the Lakers probably did a really poor job of looking ahead last summer and figuring out how to navigate the transition of power from LeBron to Luka, and we're seeing that right now. We're seeing the warts and all as that comes to fruition.
All this talk about LeBron and Luka and the Lakers, and all this talk about the Joker and the time that he missed, and all this talk about the Houston Rockets, a team that added Kevin Durant. They were very aggressive in the offseason. In all that talk, the Minnesota Timberwolves have found a way to get to 40-24. They have climbed past all of those teams that we just mentioned. And I think this is the least talked about threat in the Western Conference, James, as we get down into the final 18 games of the regular season. Minnesota's played some good basketball as of late, and right now they're the 3 seed once again.
it's really funny because I think we've done this for the last three seasons, two or three seasons with Minnesota, where they really, we talk about the Thunder, we talk about the Nuggets, and they kind of float right on the on that next level below until all of a sudden in the playoffs they're in a like locked jaws with another real elite team, and we're wondering can they topple that top seed, because the defense is always rock solid. Obviously, it's Ant. Then a bunch of other guys. Julius Randle is his second, who's a good player, but he's not a star, superstar. So it's almost like a throwback team. Not a lot of shooting, rugged defense, a throwback kind of two guard. Even though Ant takes a lot of threes and makes a lot of threes, he's more of a classic two guard, right? Shooting guard, attacks, and likes to dunk and very flashy. So it's a strange team that we have to probably give a little more credit. They're probably a little underrated because last 3 years. They have been really potent in the regular season and very, they've been dangerous in the post in the regular season and potent in their off season. So, I admit it. I don't talk enough about the Timberwolves. They're not necessarily fun to watch, but Anna's fun to watch. They have guys like Naz Reid and we can't just keep saying the Thunder and the Nuggets. We might have to throw a little love to the Timberwolves.
Can a team that is really, I mean, when we take a look at this rotation, right, DiVincenzo, Anthony Edwards, Jaden McDaniels, Julius Randle, Rudy Gobert, you go to the bench, we're talking Naz Reid and Bose Highland. Sure, throw Mike Conley back into the mix, Terrence Shannon, Kyle Anderson, if he can get healthy. If you throw this rotation, this depth that they have, nine deep into the postseason, can they get past the San Antonio Spurs if both teams advance to the second round?
I want to say no because I'm really high on the Spurs and their talent. I love the fire they play with. But let's be real. We talked about it just a minute ago. Experience. The Timberwolves have been there with Karl Anthony Towns, without Karl Anthony Towns. They have made quality playoff runs. And Anthony Edwards is one of probably the top two or three guys. If you had to make a game plan, it's hard to stop. He's one of those guys that's almost unstoppable offensively. Almost though, like we just talked about with what team was that? Well, either way, they don't have really a secondary ball handler, and that's what really might be the death sentence, because they're going to start sending Tuitt and Edwards and make somebody else destroy them. And sure, Julius Randle can score off the dribble, but he's not the most capable playmaker for others. So I wouldn't put anything past them. I still think the Thunder are the class of the West, even though they came down to earth a little bit. I thought the Nuggets were a strong second, maybe, but they've also showed some fatal flaws. So almost like the Celtics in the East, why not? The Timberwolves have, as good a shot as anyone outside of those other two teams to come out of the West.
James, before I let you go, I do want to jump back over to the Eastern Conference. I made the comment earlier that it appears that the 10 teams that will represent are set in each conference, which if that is the case, that means that the Milwaukee Bucks are on the outside looking in. This is a team that won a championship just a few years back, and it seems like this is kind of the transition period, right, for this team. Growing up, the Milwaukee Bucks were not great. I don't want to say they were the also-rans of the NBA, but there were times where they weren't good. Yeah, you didn't fear the Bucks, right? Are we getting back to that particular time, knowing that it's probably it for Giannis? Like, enjoy the last 20 games, because he's not going to be a member of the Milwaukee Bucks once we get moving into the 2026-27 season. It's kind of like an end of an era for this team that kind of flipped and won an NBA championship.
Yeah, they're, in a couple years when we do... Some shows going to do a synopsis of the Milwaukee Bucks Giannis experience. It's going to be fascinating because somehow we went from Giannis and Drew Holiday and this core that was right there. A couple of injuries happened, and now somehow he has Miles Turner and Cam Thomas as the guys that they're depending on. Bobby Portis. It's almost like franchise malfeasance. Right, it's this franchise malpractice for a front office to go from where they were to Dame Lillard to this. It's almost unfathomable how bad they have to screw things up to take a player of Giannis's ilk and end up this bad. Even with him on the court, the fact that Celtics went in there, no Tatum, and just absolutely shellacked those guys with Giannis, playing and doing his normal Giannis stuff. So we're at that point. There's a tipping point where every roster. This roster is just bad outside of Giannis. This coaching staff is bad. I don't know what he was holding on to. Maybe really a sentimental reason for him staying this extra year instead of just demanding out last summer. But I'm pretty sure he must regret it by now. I can't put words in his mouth, but he should regret it by now because he should have been gone. And it's kind of sad that it's going to end with a whimper, not a bang.
He is James Holas, always kind enough to take out the time to join us on Mondays to talk NBA basketball. James, before I let you go, where can we find more of you?
You can find me on all social media sites, Talking Basketball, Talking Life. Scottie Pippen was my favorite player growing up, so as an homage to him, you can find me at Snotty Drippin. And yeah, just come over here and just hang, and let's get ready for the playoffs.
James, always a pleasure. I appreciate the time. Thank you.
You are the man. Thanks for having me on, buddy.
We've got to pause for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up. We'll flip back, talk some NFL football when we return.